Game over!
Game over!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
This is so serious.
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Welcome to this week's extra film segment for November 1st, 2018, and I'm Ryan McQuaid.
I'm Jay Ledbetter.
Thank you guys for joining us, and for those not familiar with Extra Film, this is something we do every single Friday, where we get together and we talk about the small films, the indies, or the classics that are out there that we normally don't have time for on the main show. And on this week's show, we'll be discussing the new Netflix film Apostle from Gareth Evans. I've been screwing that up all week.
Mm-hmm. Not the Star Wars guy, not the Godzilla guy.
No, the guy from the Raids films and his new film, Apostle. We'll be talking about that. And then the back half, we'll be talking about an indie film that I'm very much looking forward to talking about, which is Thunder Road. So, that's going to be some fun discussions. But Jay, I know that it's only been a week, but I kind of missed you, bud. How's your week been? How's life?
It's been great. Last week, I mean, I'm really sorry that JD's not here. My understanding is that our argument last week made him retire from podcasting. Is that what happened? That's the word
that's
on the street.
He's not here.
I can't confirm or deny. That's just the whispers that I've heard.
Yeah, y'all's beatdown on each other last week was probably the highlight of my existence here on Extra Film. Just from the sheer magnitude of just being that this was the quietest I think I've been on an extra film. And I'm just sitting back like, when am I going to jump in? Oh, wait, these guys are just going for it. I'll see you guys in the next review. But it was a lot of fun and we got a lot of great feedback from that. And that's the great thing about extra film or just an in-session film in general is that we can agree to disagree and then somehow we can be friends through it all.
Yeah.
And speaking of JD and in session film, the main show this week that he'll be on with Brendan, they are going to be talking about the new Luca Guadagnino film Suspiria.
Nice.
But as we talk about this week's poll is not about Suspiria. This week's poll is about a different film that comes out this week, which is Bohemian Rhapsody, which I don't know if the guys will be getting to, maybe with some like extra thoughts or whatnot. I know I've seen a lot of people already have talked about this film, and it's been a pretty polarizing response. It's already below 50% on Rotten Tomatoes. But they are asking, what is the best use of a Queen song in film? And so, Jay, how would you answer this poll?
I mean, I want to try and be cool and say something other than Wayne's World, but as far as it being a cultural touchstone and just so iconic, it has to be the scene from Wayne's World with Bohemian Rhapsody. It's just an all-time classic moment that will maintain its importance through the entirety of time. I don't know if you have any of these other great Queen moments in film if that doesn't happen. That really put Queen back at the center of the culture after Freddie Mercury's death and some, that was really what brought them back was Wayne's World. So that would be my pick.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously probably the most iconic song from Queen being, of course, that's what the film is also named after. And also just, those Saturday Night Live characters coming on screen and doing that within the opening of their film is great. Though my pick would be a little bit different, and that would be the hilarious use of Don't Stop Me Now in Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, good call.
I think that that is so great. One, it's hilarious as all get out. Two, it's very well choreographed. Three, that film really brought us this start of the Cornetto trilogy that we have. And it's one of the most memorable scenes I can remember. And since it's like Halloween in a quote-unquote comedy horror film in a quite some time, one of the best uses of their music, just because of how in the beginning of the film they're using these records to throw at the zombies to kill them, and then they use the power of Queen and some cue ball sticks and whatnot to get rid of Queen. I love that scene. I think it's probably the best use of Queen, but I do agree with you that Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, that's a great one. Edgar Wright loves Queen.
Yeah, that headbanging in Bohemian Rhapsody, obviously very classic, probably my number two. But You guys can go decide for yourself on InSessionFilm.com. You can go vote on this poll, and we'll hear the results this weekend. But Jay, I think it's time that we review some films. So without further ado, let's get into it.
And here we go.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment. Jay, your eyes, they've seen things.
You do realize that this is Skype audio, right?
Thomas, your sister, she's gone. These people, they're blasphemers, a cult, a disease. Bring her home.
Name? Thomas Richardson.
I dream of a world in which each waking day we rise equal. This island, it's our paradise.
We have an intruder on our land. We have to find him.
Your eyes, they've seen things. Who are you?
That was a clip from the new film from Gareth Evans called Apostle. It stars Dan Stevens, Michael Sheen, Mark Lewis Jones, and Lucy Boynton. The synopsis of this film is: in 1905, a drifter on a dangerous mission to rescue his kidnapped sister tangles with a sinister religious cult on an isolated island. We know, Jay, that Gareth Evans is most popular for the Raid films, which are two of what some people would argue the best action films of the last couple of decades.
Right.
So when he's going into a new film like this, it's kind of new territory. This is like a psychological horror film even. It's very experimental. It's on Netflix. It's not his more traditional film. Plus, it's his first English language film. So What did you think of Evans's Apostle?
I am an absolute mark for this movie. Stylized period horror thriller fantasy is like right in my wheelhouse. And it's a kind of movie that I was looking forward to because of how unique I thought it was, and because it was Gareth Evans going into an area that he had not really explored before. We obviously knew that he could do the action. And the great thing about the Raid films is that they have some weight behind them in addition to the just spectacularly choreographed action. So this movie I was really looking forward to, really excited to watch, and I almost love this movie, but instead I'm very in the middle on it, just because there's some big things that I think this movie gets wrong. Mostly, you mentioned in your synopsis of the movie, the actors, it really is a cavalcade of actors, and I think he overstuffed it a little bit. And instead of exploring the world, which there's really a lot to explore in this world that goes pretty unexplained, the fantasy elements are largely out of left field for the most part, not really delved into at all. And instead you get these weird side threads that don't really go anywhere or contribute to the greater story, in my opinion. Or if they do, it's very through a back alleyway that they contribute, and we didn't need all of the backstory of these characters. And because of that, I could never get fully invested because there was too much thrown into the pot that I didn't think needed to be there. And the most interesting stuff I don't think was explored quite enough. There's some spectacular visuals. Evans, some of the individual scenes of this movie are so striking and so great. There's one in particular towards the latter half of the film. It's a flashback sequence where we see Dan Stevens' character There's just like, I don't want to spoil it or anything, but there's burning crosses and violence going on around him. And the way that Evans spins the camera, I mean, literally spins it like 270 degrees and gets it completely centered in frame is fantastic. But the technical craft, Evans has got it in spades, but this thing could have used a little bit of a touch up in the scripting phase, I think. So for me, I'm pretty in the middle on it. I liked it. I think there's enough craft there to recommend it. And I appreciate that a movie like this was made at all. This very violent, very adult horror, fantasy, thriller, mind effing kind of movie. But overall, glad it exists, not totally into it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about this film was, I agree, I was kind of a mark for it. Anytime you put Dan Stevens in like an independent film over the last couple of years, I'm kind of sold. One of my favorite films of the decade is The Guest, the Adam Wingard film.
Mm-hmm.
And he's so good and sinister in that film. And to find out this was kind of like that horror fantasy kind of genre, and working with Evans, who is this very stylized director. I mean, obviously he's very good at action. Those Raid films speak for themselves. They are a total craftsman's work on just how to construct an action scene the best way possible, whether it's very gruesome or whether it's just very choreographed. Those Raid films, to me, though, they suffer a little bit from just not being a focused enough story at times, even though that they have a decent run length.
This film certainly does. I mean, that movie's like 2.5 hours long, isn't it?
Yeah. And yeah, it's still so like long. To me, like, come on, we could cut some stuff, or we could even add different things. Kind of like what you're saying about Apostle. And I love Michael Sheen, so I can see him in just about anything.
Yeah.
He could talk about, you know, he could read me the paper and I would find it to be very fascinating. That being said, I think I'm a little bit higher praised on this film than you.
Okay.
I enjoyed this a lot because surprised by it a lot. I didn't think that it would be what I considered Evan's most focused film of his career so far, because I do think when the elements – there are problems. I do agree with you. There are a couple of little threads, especially with Jones's character. That I just found to be a little like out of left field and just developed real quickly and escalated to a point where I don't think it necessarily needed to go. But the end game of that and what it does with Sheen and with Stevens and the rest of the characters, I found to be absolutely fascinating. I was hooked from the opening shots of this film. I was hooked immediately through the tenseness of in trying to get to this cult island in the what seems to be kind of in the middle of nowhere. And this idea of you think that he's going to save his sister because he's being forced to do it by his family, who he obviously seems to have a strained relationship, and he's coming back. And we're just kind of thrown into Dan Stevens's situation. We don't really get to like see him like return and whatnot. It's very much like they thought he was dead, he's coming back, bingo, go find your sister. And what we're given is this dark look into cultism, which I always think is very interesting on screen, and I think Evans tackles very well. I don't know when Evans wrote this script, because a lot of it echoes what we're kind of dealing with in our own cultural or political climate. Idea of this cult leader that may or may not be a false prophet, but is actually feeding off of a larger entity, which I don't really want to spoil or get too much into, because I think that that's what's the great thing about this film, is this onion keeps peeling layers that I think to be more and more interesting and become more and more gruesome, become more and more terrifying, and become more and more risk and sacrifices for our characters as we go. I think that the film is beautifully shot. I mean, Evans has such a great eye for visual storytelling. I mean, you talked about it. That cross-burning sequence with Stevens is heartbreaking as well as terrifying.
Oh, it's captivating,
And so captivating. And I was enraptured by, there's a scene also where Stevens has to go under some water, if it were. I won't say what kind of water it was, but how tense and how horrifying it was. It was probably the most horrifying thing I've seen on television. And I watched a lot of horror films this week because I just was very much invested in these characters. I think it stumbles at parts towards the end. I don't think it lands particularly all the way.
I agree.
But the ride is so much fun that I just cannot not recommend this film. I think that there's so much to bite in this apple that it's not one that's going to be bad in the barrel.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure if I see the thematic weight of the movie in general. I think it was building towards something about the corruption of faith, which isn't necessarily the most original or insightful narrative thread or theme to explore in a movie, but it was going for it, and I thought it was doing it effectively. But I sort of thought it abandoned that in the middle to go towards this primarily narratively driven movie that didn't really touch on that and went more towards the violence and the horror of the situation around him, which I was mostly fine with. But it's just that it sort of loses one thing, goes to another, and then tries to go back to the first thing at the end of the movie, which I didn't think totally worked super well. A lot of the violence in the movie I was real into. It's very stylized and not the kind of violence that really kind of you feel for the most part. There's a couple scenes that are really like the I'm trying to freak you out kind of violence, which work equally well. And I like that he is able to blend those two. I think that's a very hard thing to do, is to go for the super stylized Tarantino style violence and then also have the real, like, this is going to screw you up for the rest of the night kind of violence. And I think he does that very, very well. And you're right about, I mean, the cinematography in this movie cannot be overstated how good I think it is. And we need to talk about the score, because the score is fantastic. I mean,
bone chilling at times.
Absolutely great. Very, I thought it was very reminiscent of like a Johnny Greenwood kind of score to me. Mm-hmm. I don't have the guy's or girl's name in front of me who actually scored the film, so I apologize to him or her. But the score is so, so good. And I think really helps out the tone of the film and really makes this film feel terrifying. When in another person's hands, it might feel a little straightforward. It really grips you and holds you down and makes you feel the horror that the characters are experiencing. I have a question for you. You mentioned how much you like Dan Stevens, and I love Dan Stevens as well. I'm not sure that this was the right role for him. Do you have an opinion there?
No, I think I tend to disagree with you. I think he's perfect. He's a perfect conduit for this kind of adventure that we're kind of taking on. I think he's a very serious enough actor. I bought into him immediately in this film. Maybe that's just because I've seen previous work that isn't just Beauty and the Beast, that I know that he is a capable enough actor. I mean, I watched the show on FX Legion, and that shows him in a very different light than a lot of his, you know, filmography. I think it shows that he can play this kind of psychologically torn actor. And he's doing that in an American accent. Of course, he's doing this in his more native tongue. So what's interesting about that is that show deals with like a lot of psychological drama, the sense of threats in terms of the psyche that lends itself very well to Thomas Richardson, because he's having to deal with his own pain and his suffering that he's gone through, fighting for his sister, trying to survive on his own, trying to understand this world and this culture that he is surrounded in, and dealing with those demons. To me, were some of the most interesting parts of the film. There's scenes in the cave that lead into that flashback that we talked about, and he is confronting Andrea, who is played by Lucy Boynton, and that pain and that sorrow that he has for his past, as well as connecting it towards what his overall goal is to try to survive, get his sister out of there. It's so captivating. I think Stevens gives what I would consider one of his best performances since The Guest on screen in this film. He really does a fantastic job. Plus, he also, in the action sequences that he's a part of, he really nails them, to be honest with you. There's a couple of them. There's not a lot of action, though, in this film.
No.
But when it is done, it's primarily with Stevens at the forefront, and he's really good in it. There's two shots. There's the one right at the end of the the reconciliation or the repentance or whatever they call it in there, that leads the whole kind of third act on the chase that it is. And then there's also the really well shot action sequence that happens inside the church when they're trying to find, obviously, who is the mole that snuck onto the island, which is of course Thomas, and the tension and the buildup and everything. It reminded me a little bit in that sense of Bill the Butcher and Leonardo DiCaprio's character trying to go up against one another in Gangs of New York, because Michael Sheen is a wonderful antagonist opposite Dan Stevens, because he's very relatable. You can understand that this guy has to do these things to take Jennifer away and kind of kidnap her, because they're struggling within their own self for reasons I really can't get into. I mean, that's the fascinating thing about this film, is that you can't really get into the specifics of it, because then it ruins the surprises I think that this film has, the interesting ways in which it goes. And it's a very much, it is a mystery box, this film. And that's what I love. I love mystery boxes. And then when we open the box, we see it. I very much say that this connects in some ways to last year's film with Darren Aronofsky, Mother, in that
we're going down a bad road.
I think it's not as focused as Mother is, because I actually think Mother is very focused on what it's trying to do. I think that this is a little less focused than that, but those elements are still there. It's the, you know, the politicalness of cults and leaders and false prophets, along with religion, the idealism of global warming and our planet and what we are doing to it as men and women. It's really those things that connected to me more than, yes, that straight narrative that kind of ties it all together. And by the end, that's the more compelling things for me. The ideas here do shine, but there are incidences where we get those moments, like I alluded to with Quinn, played by Jones, where he goes on this completely different movie in this film with his daughter and a boy in there as well. He's actually his friend's son. And they form this relationship, and it goes completely just out of left field. And that's how we kind of connect ourselves to the end of the second act. And it just,
I mean, that was the real part of the movie that I was just not a fan of. I thought it really bogged the film down.
It really did. And that, to me, it loses its kind of seriousness or its focus. Because at that point, beyond that, before we started getting to that, we were really, I would say, gearing up for possibly one of my favorite films of the year. And then it goes,
I actually kind of felt the same way too.
And then I think it goes back and does all that stuff. And then it tries to come back, like you said. And I was hooked when it came back to that. I kind of erased out of my mind the Quinn sequences with his daughter and Jeremy. So I kind of just got that out of my head. But then once I get back into it, that ending is really fun, as well as very captivating. The action in it's really good, and the interesting elements that connects it all together, to me, made this film get back on track, but wasn't as perfect as I think it could be. That's why, you know, I am a big apologist for Mother last year. I thought that that film worked absolutely perfect, and I don't think it lost a beat throughout that entire film, and I actually had a big grin walking out of that film, because I actually thought it was in some ways a little bit of a comedy. And which is kind of weird.
I think it is. I think it is too. I just
and,
think it's bad.
maybe that's just the sadistic person I am. But this film, I didn't find it to be as funny or as kind of comedic as anything.
No, I kind of figures
because I think there's that cinematography and that score that carry this to a very serious tone. And when we do those little moments in the middle, it is kind of distracting and kind of derails it just for a bit. From making it perfect.
I think actually you bring up Mother. I think these movies have opposite issues in my mind, which is sort of that Mother was so obsessed with its focus that it got just completely up its own butt and just caved in on itself, in my opinion. This movie has, you know, this story that it's doing, and I do think it does throw in these little side thematic themes, like you were talking about with global warming and the nature of cults and things like that. There's just like, oh yeah, let's throw a little dash of this in too, which, like I said earlier, kind of changes up what the movie is for a little while. And then we have the part that you were talking about with Jones and his daughter, and just completely feels like a different movie. And because of that, I thought they missed an opportunity to develop the weird stuff that we see come to the forefront as the movie goes on. And instead of having this developed story with this, honestly, a world that they could make multiple movies off of, we have this very shallow idea of what this island is. And we're left to imagine what sort of scenarios could have created the circumstances that come about throughout the movie. And especially in the very last scene of the movie, the last shot is like really kind of contrived given everything that we've seen. It's really making you connect some dots that aren't really there, in my opinion. So I just couldn't, as much as I really liked the early parts of this movie, I couldn't keep up. I don't think it kept up the momentum that it needed to come to a satisfying conclusion.
Yeah, I can see that, Jay. I mean, this film is very much a lot of pieces that you have to put together. I think from the get-go of this film, like I mentioned, we don't get a lot of backstory into Thomas. We're just kind of thrown into his situation. We obviously understand the goals and whatnot.
But we learn about him at least.
We learn about him over time, but we're thrown right into him. And I think that's the thing, is that even from what we've seen, there's obviously more to the story than that which we are shown. So I think that I am more forgiving of the film in terms of that kind of structure. I'm not saying that you can't. But I think the intention that Evans has is for his audience to kind of read between the lines and think more, less about the story and more about what they're seeing, which is this, you know, this island that you talked about, which has a lot of things going for it. Yes, I do agree with you. It is evocative of the original Wicker Man, not the Nicolas Cage with the bees Wicker Man. Wicker Man. It has that cultish, that creepy vibe. You think that everything's going right or it's just a normal place and there's something more sinister underneath. And those elements to me, I think, are really cool. And I think you cannot knock Evans for his visual style here. And I know
Best part of the movie.
It's the best part of the movie. It's one of those visual styles that I'll say, I'm glad Netflix gave him the avenue to do this, because I think a lot of what Netflix has done over the last couple of weeks, we talked about 22 July, and we've talked about Hold the Dark, and we've talked about a lot of directors' visions, and I've sat there going, like, why did they want to make this project? I mean, like, this doesn't seem like them. This is one of those instances where I've sat there and I went, wow, thank you, Netflix, because without you, I don't think we get to see a film like this. Now, granted, we don't get to see this film on the big screen, which would have been really cool to see just from a visual standpoint, but I think that is okay because of the fact that we are given some pretty impeccable shots by Evans and his crew in this film. Let's get to final thoughts on this film, Jay. Any more final thoughts you have on Apostle?
I just want to reiterate what you just said. Evans has a masterful eye for a shot and is a master with the camera. I mean, visually, this is one of the most compelling films of the year, in my opinion. I loved that element. So much of the technical stuff works for me. The score, again, I want to say, like, I looked for it on Spotify the other day. It's not there. I was very upset. It's such a great score. I want to be able to listen to it. But besides that, you know, it felt like it could have been a Game of Thrones style epic fantasy movie. Not that it has to be that, but with this horror thrown in, just basically like a horror fantasy film. And it threw in this fantasy so irresponsibly, I thought, as far as just like, I want this to be here because I want it to be fantasy, but I'm not interested in that part of it. That's how it felt to me. And I was really into the fantasy elements that were being presented, and it just never built on them because he wanted to focus on these human elements, which the part that we were talking about with Jones and his daughter is by far the worst part of the film. And there's other side characters too who they tried to build off of that really kind of bogged the movie down. It's 2 hours, 10 minutes, I think. And I didn't think it felt long, like we've talked about with, you know, several of the movies, the whole controversy of a movie over 2 hours that happened a few weeks ago or whatever. But I didn't think this felt really long. I just think that regardless of how it felt, there's some stuff that should have been cut out. And I think there's other stuff that should have been put in its place. So it felt like there was this shell of a movie that I would have loved. It's just that what they put inside of that shell wasn't completely great for me. And I really want to love this. I was really, really close to loving it after about an hour. And then some of it fell apart for me. So I'm very mixed on it.
Yeah, and that's for my final thoughts. Like I've said, I had a lot of fun with this movie. And maybe it's because I walked in with some expectations of not really, you know, being over-jazzed about a lot of the elements of the Raid films. I mean, obviously the action is there in those films, but to me, the films are just kind of, they're there. You know, I don't see much more than a couple of great action sequences that I know I'll get criticized for on film Twitter after people have listened to this show. But I had a lot of fun with this. I will say, though, I know I've been a very positive person about this film. There are some negatives that I have mentioned, which is the Jones kind of subplot with his daughter and Jeremy. I thought that that was a little weak. I think the whole scene, while it's very well shot and it's very much for shock value, there is a scene with Jones and Jeremy that is very graphic and very violent and very unnecessary.
That was an odd scene.
Yeah. And no, it's odd because obviously we want to build up a villain in this film a little bit, but I think that the humans themselves could be villains, not necessarily having to focus on one single person. And by the end of the film, it kind of just throws a little bit of all that out of the way.
Yes, because it can't decide if it wants to be a story about a cult or a story about God demons.
I know, but I was having so much fun with it that I kind of forgave
and
it.
I wish I was so bad.
I know. But I will say there is one other aspect of this film that I'm not a big fan of, and it is the female characters in this film.
Okay.
Are very blandly written. I think Andrea, played by Lucy Boyette. I've messed up her name a lot tonight. I'm sorry, guys. I think that she's fine for what she's given, but she very much in that second and third act becomes just a throwaway character and just worry face. She becomes very worry face throughout the entire film because they stop writing her character.
It does become a little damsel in distress-y at the end.
Yeah, well, I think that that leads right into the character of Jennifer, his sister. She's very damsel in distress-y. And there's even another character that is a female that I really won't get into. That is very much mistreated throughout the whole film, and for reasons that bite everybody back in the butt by the end of it. But just every single female character in this film just kind of felt a little like they could write this thing better. And so maybe that's just me, because obviously Sheen and Stevens give pretty damn good performances in my opinion. Everybody else in this film just kind of seems to be a little wasted, especially the female characters, which I like Andrea's character in the beginning, and I think she has a compelling reason to be around this whole action.
I thought Boynton was actually very good.
Yeah, I think you'd mentioned that damsel in distress thing. She becomes that. I think she could be a lot more than just that.
Yeah, for sure.
And that to me was a little bit troublesome. But other than that, we've mentioned a lot of things about this film, and I know JD has written some thoughts, I believe, over on our Letterboxd page at letterboxd.com/insessionfilm.
And if you agree with Ryan's takes, JD's takes, or my takes, or if you disagree with them, please let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or you can email us at insessionfilm@gmail.com.
All right, guys, coming up, we're going to take a quick break here, but on the other side, we're going to be talking about Jim Cummings' film Thunder Road. And so stay tuned and we'll be right back.
The screen door slams, Mary's dress waves. Like a vision, she dances across the porch as the radio plays. Roy Orbison singing for the lonely. Hey, that's me and I want you only. Don't turn me home again, I just can't face myself alone again. Don't run back inside, darling, you know just what I'm here for. So you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore. Show a little faith, there's magic in the night.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hi guys, I'm Dean.
And I'm Daniel.
And we're from the IMDb Journey podcast,
where we break down every movie from the top 250 list, giving our own thoughts and reviews and any general discussion along the way.
But when we're not doing that, we also battle other podcasts in various movie-related games of trivia and drafts.
We also give quick reviews about every other film we've watched as well.
Yeah, here we're quite good too.
Yeah, if you guys don't believe us, why don't you listen to these genuine testimonies?
Oh, hey guys, you guys are really good. I love your chemistry.
Oh, hey, brew. This is a good podcast, yo. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, love the banter, guys. Keep it up.
IMDb Journey is one of my favorite podcasts of all time. Ah, fantastic testimonies.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Absolutely genuine and real. And if you want to give a genuine testimony as well, go ahead and search for IMDb Journey. You can find us on all your favorite podcast sites, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify.
So come along and join our journey.
Hello, In Session Film Podcast listeners. We take a moment to interrupt this daily programming to bring you the next Best Picture podcast run by myself, Matt Neglia, where Michael Schwartz, Will Matheny, Dan Chiesese, Ryan C. Showers, and a slew of others, we are all on a search to find what is going to be the next Best Picture winner at the Oscars. Join us on our journey as we look at foreign films, documentaries, independent movies, as well as big action blockbusters. Everyone is a contender until they are not. Be sure to listen to us on all of the podcasting networks, including iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, and on CastBox. Be sure to come check us out on nextbestpicture.com, where we also have movie reviews, weekly polls, the before-mentioned podcast, as well as a lot more content revolving around the award season. Thank you so much for listening to me ramble. Now, back to JD and Brandon.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast Extra Film segment. Ryan, I'm really not going to be good at this kind of stuff.
Well, we all know that, man, but we still love you anyway.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't care. It's fine. I won't work here anyway. You want me to talk? Yeah, I'll talk. You don't want me to talk. I got dirt on all of y'all. I'll start with myself. My wife left me a year and a half ago. There, laugh it up. I slept in my car. 3 weeks. Jerry saw it. Isn't that right, Jerry?
Yeah, I brought you breakfast.
Thank you so much for doing that, Jerry. That meant a lot back then.
You're drunk.
I'm not drunk. I'm angry. I realize that. Calm down. I lost my daughter today. For what? So I could impress you when I gave up my family.
And the rest of it.
What, you want my pants too? Fine. You can keep them. I don't care. You can't hurt me. You think you're hurting me? I found out she lost her boyfriend in Vietnam! I never asked her about it! What? I never made it die!
That absolutely hilarious clip was from the comedy Thunder Road, which is written by, directed by, and stars Jim Cummings, and also features actors Nikon Robinson, Jocelyn DeBoer, Kendall Farr, and Macon Blair. And the film follows a police officer who faces a personal meltdown following a divorce and the death of his mother. This is definitely a very unique film and really unlike anything you'll see this year. Ryan, what did you think of Thunder Road?
Well, I know when we were originally going to do reviews for this week, we were going to do a different film, and then I found that Thunder Road was coming out, and I had heard a lot about this film from South by Southwest, and I just heard how unique and different it was. And usually every year we get like films from directors that I just feel like they're giving us something that we never get to see. And I think that like David Lowery is one of those directors. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that Sean Baker is definitely one of those directors. And I think now we can start with this first film. We could say that Jim Cummings might be one of those first directors.
Okay.
I absolutely loved Thunder Road. This film is as dark a comedy as you're going to find this year, but it has so much heart with it as well. It's painful at times to watch, heart-wrenching. Cummings, who is the writer, director, and he is the main actor. He is the lead in this film. He's absolutely magnetic on screen, in my opinion. He is so convincing as this downtrodden, kind of broken man trying to put the pieces of his life and go on after his mother, who obviously was very influential to him. And we see in the beginning of this film, him doing this eulogy, and it's this very strange, honestly honest portrayal of a eulogy I've seen on cinema in quite some time. The, you know, way he cuts his speech back and forth between one thing or another, his manicness of saying one thing and then saying hi to another while you're speaking and then going back to the thing and then breaking down and crying. It's so well done. And then there's, of course, a sequence that happens with it that is absolutely hysterical, cringeworthy, and also beautiful at the same time, too.
You pretty much just described the entire movie.
Yeah, and I think that that's exactly how I would describe this film. It is all those things wrapped up in this beautiful bow. It's really good. I want to talk about a lot of other things about this film, but Jay, I want to get your response. I want to see what you think about Thunder Road as well.
The conversation surrounding Thunder Road has to begin and end with Jim Cummings, who has established himself as a guy whose next movie I will see no matter what after this movie. I'm with you 100%. I loved this movie. A lot. I mean, this might be one that I talk about at the end of the year as one of my favorites of the year, potentially, depending on how the rest of the year goes. But I mean, Jim Cummings he started out as a college, he worked at College Humor. He was making videos with College Humor. And now he's making this insanely personal, human, heartbreaking, hysterical piece of art. It's, I mean, the ability to combine the degree of melancholy and hilarity that this movie manages to do is remarkable. I mean, there's not very many people that have ever made movies who are able to combine those two elements in the way that I think Cummings is able to do in this movie. So let me just get that hyperbolic statement out of the way, I guess. I mean, I love it. I think Jim Cummings is like Jim Carrey physical comedy great, just as far as the heightened emotions that he's able to portray, but he's also really able to make you feel for the just really brutal things that he goes through in this movie. And from the very, I mean, the first scene of this film is going to grab you on and take you through the rest of the movie. The first scene is a, I don't know, 10 minute take of him at a funeral riffing and trying to cope with his own emotions while also trying to play it as cool as he can and maybe trying to entertain people and just cope in the bizarre way that his character would actually cope in the world of this movie. And it is a world that at once feels very much like our own and completely separate from us, which again is just like something that not very many people are able to pull off. And it's so, so funny in the darkest of ways. And it also, I just want to keep talking about Jim Cummings because his ability to show the disconnect between himself and his daughter in this film, which is one of the main thrusts of this movie, you see him trying so hard to get along with his daughter and the disconnect that those two are able to establish. I don't know if it is chemistry, if they're so good at being awkward together, or is it like a lag? I don't know, but they managed to pull it off absolutely perfectly. And from the perspective of a fan of SEC football, he's an LSU football fan and his wife is moving to Tuscaloosa. So I think automatically she should be stripped of any rights to her daughter moving to the hellhole that is Tuscaloosa, Alabama. No, I'm saying that in jest. I'm an Auburn fan, so any Alabama fans we've got on here, I'm sorry, I didn't really mean it. But no, I loved this movie so, so much, and I'm glad that I purchased it instead of renting it because I'm going to watch it multiple more times this year. I liked it that much.
Yeah, I mean, you're hitting the nail on the head. I mean, Cummings is the main star. I mean, he wrote, directed, stars in the film. I think he got the financing for this all together and everything. I mean, this is his labor of love, but I don't want to just talk about Cummings. Cause I think that there are every single bit player in this film that works with them, they're doing great work as well. I think
Nakon Robinson, for sure,
who plays his partner, Nate, is such a compelling person for him because that's the closest relationship he really has. You would think it's with his sister, who we see in the film, or it's with, you know, his daughter, who is played fantastically by Kendall Farr in this film. But it's not. It's his partner who's with every single day. He's even picking him up when he should be on administrative leave due to the, you know, the death of his mother. He's always inviting him over for dinner. He's the first person to talk to about everything of this. And yet Jim Cummings' character, coincidentally named after him, is always getting in the way of that. He's always, you know, saying no, or he's just kind of, you know, not wanting to face anybody else. He's kind of a loner. He's kind of, as much as he wants social connection, he is this guy that is kind of drawn away from it, it feels like. And when he gets it, it's super awkward. And he's a very awkward guy, but in the best sort of way. I mean, it's downright hilarious, his interactions. I mean, there's an interaction when he does finally go to Nate's house. And he's talking about, is there something to do with, like, do you get alerts about farmers markets and stuff so you can have real family moments? And to me, just sitting there, just how awkward it is for everyone at that table. But for him, he's just generally curious. Like, is that something that happens? And he's just not up to the social norms. And I think there's so much that builds up to the surface with Jim that when it breaks down and it boils over, it is explosive and heartbreaking. I mean, this film is absolutely heartbreaking.
Yep.
In that it just builds this guy up. You're rooting for him constantly. He keeps stumbling over his own feet. It's very much like Chaplin or Buster Keaton, in that sense of that there's this guy that is, you know, our protagonist, and he keeps falling down. He's picking himself back up, but it's continuously, for Jim in this film, getting worse and worse and worse. And for me, Cummings just nails what the misery of what it would be like. I feel like this film, and I haven't mentioned this yet, is a great companion piece to watch with eighth grade. Because this what we would see with Josh Hamilton's character if he was the focal point of the film. Because it feels like Kendall Farr's character and Elsie Fisher are roughly, it feels like, around the same age. She's a little bit younger, obviously, but it feels like that tonally is that disconnect between the father and the daughter. And by the end of both films, they really do connect in a lot of ways. And in eighth grade, but in this film, the connection is one of tragedy. And that, to me, is so well done. It's not forced. It doesn't feel like we're in a place where, we're checking off boxes like we are in some films. No, this all feels right. It kind of feels a little bit of sudden at times, that ending, but it works beautifully. And man, Cummings nailed this movie, man. There's nothing more I can say about this film other than give Jim Cummings more films. I hope that he receives a check from Netflix to do something soon, because he needs to tell more stories, man.
Yeah. And this movie it would only cost $200,000, but it made that money back in its first weekend, which is awesome to see. So I think he's definitely going to be given more chances, which is really, really cool. And I want to just point out, from a writing standpoint, which, you know, he also wrote it, just some of the small character stuff in this movie I really love, like the dance academy that sort of hangs over the entirety of this movie that he is responsible for now that his mother has passed away, is just another burden that weighs on him throughout the movie that accumulates into this state of mind and state of being that completely breaks him. And then at the end, when he is confronted with having to pull himself back together in spite of everything that has happened to him throughout the course of the movie, he's just so good at picking himself up, rubbing the dirt off his shoulders, and being like, all right, I still have to be an adult after all of this. And it's even more amazing to me, coming from a 30-year-old guy. I mean, I'm almost 30. This feels, I think if you look at the face of the movie, it feels so distant. But when I really consider the realities of what he's facing, it feels weirdly close, which may be a reason that I connect to it even more so, is because he is showing these things that are traditionally going to be, you know, a 45-year-old character in a movie through the lens of a 30-year-old, which is just something you don't see very often. And I really appreciated that. And we keep talking about how dramatic and human and everything it is. It's also very, very funny. The things that go terribly wrong in his life are played with the level of humor that totally works. I mean, it's really, really funny if you're on board with the tragicomedy that this movie is presenting. And I laughed a lot. I mean, the ending of the movie is heartbreaking. It covers the entire gamut of emotions, and it's mostly because of Jim Cummings' performance. I think I don't know if anyone else could have played this role as good as he did, and it is his vision through and through, writing, directing, starring in, and I mean, I don't think it could have worked out better for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely a fantastic film,
and I like it more as we're talking about it, which is what usually happens on the show when we both like a movie, we both keep propping it up and propping it up and propping it up. I don't know if that's the same for you.
No, I think the thing about this film is it's such a small. It was in theaters for like a week in Austin and never made it down here to San Antonio, so I urge people to just, you know, to go see it. I mean, it's one of those films that that demands to be seen before we start making end of the year lists. And like I said, it's a great companion piece to eighth grade. It shows kind of the opposite side of that as well.
Yeah, no, that's totally right. But I guess with that, now that we've heaped all this praise on it, let's move on to final thoughts. Do you have a last thing to say before we head out of here, Ryan?
Yeah, I just, you mentioned the humor. I think the humor in this is dark. So I don't think and it's not for everyone. Okay. I think a lot of people out there are going to, they might say how mean he is or how whatever you throw at him. I don't think that's the case. I mean, obviously there's a joke in here about like a train and, that I found to be absolutely hysterical given the context of who the character is involved. And like construction, I guess it's like a construction in a train or something like that. And then later on, him having to like backtrack off of it. That's the great thing about this film is like how many statements he makes. Mm-hmm. And then his backtracks are absolutely hysterical or they're super tense. And you mentioned it. It's like Cummings is like a cross between the goofiness and zaniness and all over the place manicness of Jim Carrey. And then the hyper seriousness, emotional, deep actor that somebody like an Ethan Hawke can bring.
That's high praise.
I agree with you. Yeah. And I think that that's what's really interesting is that he is really able to find the balance that you need because this could go in a very mean spirited way. This film could be really nasty and it's never that. It's done with such a sophisticated, warm, tender heart that you feel for Officer Jim by the end of this film. You really do feel for Cummings' character in here. And so, yeah, I mean, just go and see it. Don't rent it. I made the mistake of renting it. I want to go buy this thing now. I want to own this because I think that this is a film that you need to own because it's made by small time filmmakers too, guys. And that's something that we also need to, in these days and times where things are extremely hard both for female and male filmmakers to go and prop up these smaller movies because they need to have their voice heard. And that's why we have them here on Extra Film.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I love being able to do this show and look at movies like this $200,000 indie that has sort of taken the world by storm. It's such a phenomenal movie. For the $200,000, this thing looks so, so good. I mean, it looks like a $10 million movie. At least it just looks like a fully funded movie when I'm sure he had to scrape and claw his way to get as much money as he did for it based on, you know, a short coming off of a career at College Humor. The arc of Jim Cummings' career is really fascinating. And I've read some stuff on him. They did a great write up on him on The Ringer. I think there's a really good piece there, but I mean, everything about this movie, I think, works, and it's such an emotional experience, and the ability to connect that emotion to the surreal humor of really life around us that we experience every day. I think what Jim Cummings does in this movie is something that a lot of directors will strive for the rest of their careers and never achieve. I really think he's done something with this first movie that makes him maybe like the up-and-comer, the guy who hasn't gotten a chance to do really the complete movie that he wants to do. As soon as he gets the money to make the movie that he wants to make, I'm all in. I mean, I adored this movie. It's one of my favorites of the year, and as I keep talking about it, it's slowly creeping its way up the list. So highly, highly recommend Thunder Road. But if you want to hear more of our thoughts, you can go to our Letterboxd page on letterboxd.com/insessionfilm.
And again, we'd love to hear you guys' feedback if you agree with our high praise or even if you disagree with our takes on Thunder Road. Leave us comments on all of our various social media pages. And on that note, that's going to do it for this week's extra film. Just a friendly reminder to also go and follow us on those Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages. And we do try to respond to every single piece of fan mail or emails or questions you have, whether it's for extra film or the main show or even for Chasing the Gold. So email us at insessionfilm@gmail.com.
And please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, while you're on iTunes, please leave us a review. We would greatly appreciate it. Those are super important to any and all podcasts. Our podcasts are also syndicated every week at geekcastradio.com, the Podfix Network, and the Lamb Podcast Network. Also, check out our Listen Now page on our website at insessionfilm.com/listen-now.
And the In Session Film podcast is supported by our awesome listeners that are listening right now, just like yourselves. If you want to help us out, you can go over to our website at insessionfilm.com. You can click on the main menu to find our bonus content, which right now is bonus content that me and Mr. J.D. Durant did about Halloween and even gave our thoughts about the David Gordon Green Halloween. And you can go and hear that bonus content for just a small donation of 99 cents. You can check out the In Session Film store where you can buy some cool merch, or you can go and just donate at insessionfilm.com/donate. And you'll see all of our information there on how you can help us out. You can also hear all of our amazing shows on our mobile app for a one-time fee of $1.99. You can find our app at the Amazon Market for Android devices, the Windows 10 store for Windows devices, and the PodSource app for iOS devices. You can see all these details and more at insessionfilm.com/apps. And that's going to do it for Extra Film. This week's main show, it will be episode 298, and it's going to be a review of Suspiria. I don't know what the top three is going to be yet, but I'm sure it's going to be a great one from JD and from Brendan. And so with that being said, Jay, let's get in some final thoughts. Do you got any final thoughts before we head out?
I guess my final thought would just be that I feel so overwhelmed by the amount of movies that I'm going to have to see in the next 2 months. I'm just looking at the list right now of movies that are coming out. Boy Erased, Bodied, Bohemian Rhapsody, Suspiria, Overlord, Girl in the Spider's Web, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Outlaw King. Those come out in the next 2 weeks, those mm-hmm. that I just said. And that doesn't include other stuff like Will You Ever Forgive Me? It's ridiculous. I haven't seen Beautiful Boy yet. We're in a time to delight in and also be overwhelmed by. So I'm excited to experience all of that and talk about some of those movies on Extra Film. That's about it. Because again, football does not exist and it's dumb.
Well, for my final thoughts, yes, I do kind of echo you after my Longhorns lost this past weekend. I will say that football is extremely stupid and a dumb activity that no one should watch. No, I'm just kidding. I hope my Horns can turn it around against West Virginia this weekend. I think we got a good shot. Our defensive players have been saying all week that they're going to come play pretty pissed off after their performance last week. So that's a good sign. And I do echo your sentiments, Jay, about this busy movie season that we're going to be having. And that's what's so great about being here on Extra Film, is that we're going to be talking about a lot of these films, and we'll be talking about them, if not on the main show, hopefully sometimes maybe we'll get to guest spot and talk about the bigger films. I'm extremely happy because it's, you know, the more films we get, that means the closer to Oscar season we get. That means the closer we get to talk about more and more great films. And with that, I want to plug Chasing the Gold, which is the third episode of the Chasing the Gold episodes that I have done, our Oscar podcast on In Session Film. And That episode has Mr. Will Mavity and Mr. Kevin Jacobson, who are two really great guys that I had a fun conversation to talk with about. We talked about the directors and the screenplay awards. And I mean, there's so many options left out there to see in terms of films that, guys, you can't go wrong, but just don't go see Bohemian Rhapsody, because I just feel like we don't need to support A, that director, or B, we don't need to support a film that kind of tarnishes, I think, Freddie Mercury's legacy, just based off of what I've heard from everybody else.
How many Oscar nominations is Thunder Road going to get?
As many, hopefully, as Madeline's Madeline. Anyway,
zero, baby.
And on that note, thank you guys for listening to Extra Film, and we will see you guys next week.
From the Podfix Network. You can check out more shows like it at podfixnetwork.com.